by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Simpson and Terry O'Neill.
And that's us.
That would be us.
Back live and in the flesh, Terry.
It is us.
Here we are. We've been in reruns for the last couple of weeks, and before that, I was away. You held the fort with Mark and other...
With a little help from our friends.
With a little help from our friends. Great to be back here, Carrie. Great to see you again. It's been a great summer, and we've got a great show tonight.
As always.
Yeah.
So how has your summer been?
Well, very eventful. A little vacations, lots of... we'll talk about that later in the show, but it's a big decision I've reached. And
another decision in Terry O'Neill's
another
life.
Another milestone. By the way... This summer, I officially became 20 better than 40.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, congratulations and happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
And a week ago, I had my seventh grandchild.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
So personal milestones, it's what, you know, that is very hard to believe. I mean, you might think that the camera makes her look younger, but actually, this is the way she looks in real life, very young, so.
Yeah, well, when you have that many grandkids, you got to keep up with them. Yeah,
on your knees crawling away. That's right. We have a great show tonight, and we should get right to it. Later in the show, we'll be talking to George Kovacek from the Parents' Voice in Burnaby. It's been a continuing theme on our show here at Roadkill Radio, and about the latest smoking gun email that has turned up and made the Vancouver Sun, as made their local papers, been on the wires, and a very important issue dealing with parent rights, dealing with truth, dealing with responsibility and education.
And government.
And government,
and
too.
And the proper role of trustees, the proper role of their duty to obey the law.
Yeah. And in just a little while, before we talk to George, we'll be talking to Chris Delaney, the conquering Chris Delaney. He and Bill VanderZam, of course, led the anti-HST charge here in British Columbia, and you don't have to be from British Columbia to know that they were successful, that there was a referendum, and 54% of the voters voted to extinguish the HST. So the province of British Columbia is going back to the old and inefficient HST system.
Oh, I was waiting for that. No way. You
yes,
are
okay.
going to get so
it is.
Spanked.
It is an inefficient system. But speaking of being spanked, the BC Liberal government did deserve to be spanked.
They
this, so
did.
It's and they got spanked
royally.
Royally, and their bums are red, without a doubt. But first, before we go to Chris Delaney, which will be in half an hour or so, 45 minutes, we are going to be speaking direct from Toronto, where he is recovering from his first show, or maybe celebrating the campaign, the champagne corks may be popping. Michael Corrin is the first, is the newest of a great lineup of hosts on Sun TV with his new show, The Arena. It was broadcast live today for the first time at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 o'clock here in British Columbia. And I watched most of the show, and what a lineup of guests he had. We don't want to go over the show. There's other issues that we want to talk to Michael Corrin about. But he had on, here's my list.
All right, Terry. Where's your list, Terry O'Neill?
He had on the great Mark Stein.
Well,
he had on the great blonde conservative pundit from the United States, Ann Coulter. And he had on Tariq Fatah, the great Muslim Canadian commentator. And he also had on, all this in the space of an hour, Yuan Williams, the National Public Radio host, the ex-National Public Radio host, who was essentially muzzled, fired.
Emphasis on the ex.
Yeah, emphasis on the ex. Author of a new book, Muzzled, about how he was fired from his position on National Public Radio. So we're not going to go over all of that, but we are going to touch on that and raise some other issues as well. But welcoming now to the show, Michael Corrin. Hello, Michael.
Hello there.
Great to have you on. It's Terry here, and we're with Carrie Simpson as well.
My pleasure.
Good evening, Michael. They let you out of the arena to come play on Roadkill, did they?
Yeah, it was an interesting evening because the debut of any show, you know, I was 12 and a half years at the last one, and this was the first, and we did pack it with some pretty impressive people. I've been a little surprised that the response has been 90-odd% very positive. I expected more death threats and abuse. I'm a bit disappointed, really.
Well, maybe it was your security guards that were surrounding the studio or something like that were frightening people away.
No, his adversaries are still in shock.
Well, we did show Now, I mean, the Kurt Vestergaard cartoon of Muhammad has been shown before, but the cartoon by Lars Vilks, the Swedish artist, of it's meant to be Muhammad's head on the body of a dog, that's not been shown before on national TV. So I do expect there'll be some sort of response in the days to come.
You felt the need to debut it, did you?
It's not the picture itself. I mean, you know, I have a strong faith myself, and I respect those who hold theirs dear, and there are many Muslims I know who are Orthodox, and they're friends of mine. What I object to, though, is this idea that you cannot deconstruct or critique a primary text or an iconic figure. You know, I do not enjoy seeing Jesus, seeing the Virgin Mary mocked and abused. But at the same time, I have to defend someone's right to do that if I want to live in a free society.
Right, and, you know, we Christians have that thrown in our face here in Vancouver maybe 15 years ago when the Vancouver Art Gallery bought one of Andres Serrano's piss portraits. This was, I think, Piss Pope, or was it Piss Christ, and put it on display here. A picture of a small sculpture of Christ, or a small sculpture of the Pope, immersed in the artist's urine, and put that on display at the Vancouver Art Gallery. There was no, there were no riots in the street. There was a polite protest, a strong protest in some instances, but we weren't threatening to kill people.
No, of course, if there is public funding involved, it's a different issue.
That's true.
Freedom of expression is one thing, but the taxpayer having to fund garbage like that is something entirely different. And, you know, they do this because it's very safe. I mean, it's like shouting at mummy and then running up to your room knowing the worst that's going to happen is you won't get supper. If they mock Jesus, Mary, the Pope, nothing much will happen to them. Although, if they did that, I find this quite interesting, if they did that in a Muslim country, they would be in trouble because, of course, Muslims do have a reverence for Jesus and the Virgin Mary. So even those figures being attacked in an Islamic state would land them in some pretty hefty trouble.
Now, freedom of speech is a big theme with your show. It's a big theme here on Roadkill Radio as well, Michael. And I'm beginning to think that perhaps with high-profile people like yourself and like everybody on Sun TV, and maybe to a lesser extent like Carrie and I here in our little corner of the world in Roadkill Radio, that people are giving us a little more leeway because they know that they'll be in for a heck of a fight, and the last thing they want to do is to have more publicity, a harsher light of reality shone on their repressive regimes, whether it's the Provincial Human Rights Commission or the federal one, because that would just lead to an eventual court challenge of some sort, and they know they're going to lose there, so they would rather just maybe pick the low-lying fruit, or the low-hanging fruit, rather, and go after the little guys who don't have a voice in the media. And I think that's sort of the era that we're entering now. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's very perceptive. You know, I've been in this country half my life. I've been here 25, 26 years now. And when I first came to Canada, things were very bleak. And the last 10 years in particular, there have been a lot of breakthroughs. Now, I mean, the two people in particular who deserve enormous credit are Mark Stein, who, of course, is on the show tonight, and Ezra Levant, who works for the station. People like myself and others, we've written about it, but these two really took it head-on. And we've now reached a situation where human rights commissions, they still do their worst, but they look over their shoulder the whole time.
Yes.
And I do confidently think that within the next 5 to 10 years, they will be removed. They will simply disappear. Of course, it depends on election results. We have to have governments that have the courage to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the climate is getting a bit better. Mind you, having said that, in Europe, for example, things are very bad. The country I'm from, the UK, that used to pride itself on mocking everything and a sense of humor, we have the police having all sorts of powers that they didn't have in the past. We're going to have quite soon on the show a young woman who's a pro-life activist. So it doesn't really matter what your views are on this issue. It's not the issue itself. It's that her camera was confiscated by a police officer making an arrest of a demonstrator. Now, the demonstrator was inside the abortion clinic, so the police have a right to arrest her. I understand that. But they took her little camera away and said it was a potential weapon. They then deleted all of the files that she had, where she had recorded the police making the arrest. She got a perfect right to do that. She was on public property.
Yes.
They confiscated it. They went through all of the programs to delete all the files, then lied through their teeth and said they'd confiscated it because they thought it was a weapon. No investigation. We have to realize that the old patterns of left and right where conservatives supported the police question this sometimes. The police also, they're meant to be guardians of the people, not agents of the state. But more and more in Europe and North America, particularly, well, not so much the U.S., but here in Europe, they are becoming organs and agents of the state, and that's worrying.
Well, no, actually, we see it here often, Michael, but in forums that typically don't get much attention. A lot of the work I do is involving families who have their children apprehended. And it's interesting. If I'm involved, for instance, if the police show up, I just simply remind them that the child has to be in immediate need of protection for them to have any authority, or else the social workers needs to go get a warrant.
Mm-hmm.
They love me when I'm there, and they do that, and they say goodbye to the social workers, and social workers are usually squawking, saying, you can't leave us here. But failing my availability for the thousands of apprehensions that take place, which is all too often, the police more than accommodate the state because nobody's questioning their authority to be there or their need to be there. We are seeing this we here in British Columbia. We've seen the RCMP and other law enforcement agencies go into little compound pharmacies to remove lavender oil, you know. Increasingly, you know, we're seeing some of these issues, but they don't make it into the mainstream or downstream media, as we refer to it here in BC. So, you know, there are those tendencies starting to happen, and I'm with you. I think people need to wake up and go, wait, there's a proper relationship between the state, there's a proper relationship between state and family, and our law enforcement agencies and the people. And there's a bit of encroachment going on that has my antennas going up.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the G20 protests out here. Now, the protesters, putting aside the violent ones, just the ordinary protesters, I probably have nothing in common with any of them. You know, I mean, I have no time for these people. But what we saw in Toronto was initially, of course, just a very bad policing where they were frightened of going after these thugs. But the following day, all sorts of people who were simply denied their basic rights. People coming out of restaurants, people out on a date were suddenly being arrested. And this is not urban mythology. This is not apocryphal. I know people who were involved.
Hmm.
A young woman who was finishing work, a decent young woman. She'd just done, you know, her weekend job. She's coming home. She's tired. She was arrested. She was handcuffed. A cop, she was very attractive, a cop then made some comment, a sexual comment. I mean, this outrageous behavior. She was then left after several hours, let go on the street, in tears. Her cell phone had no battery power left. This is not typical, but it's more and more common. We have, it used to be the cops, okay, they may not have been brilliant. You know, some of them were, but generally they were pretty maybe basic guys. They knew how to do their job. They could be pretty tough if necessary. They've become so politically correct now, and some of them, you see people, they're not in any way physically intimidating, so they have to, I suppose, try and be morally intimidating and impose their politics on people. You know, this is a problem. One of the great things, one of the many great things about Sun News is that we're going to highlight these issues. Certainly myself, but Ezra very much, and I think Charles Adler and Brian Lilly, we will make sure that people are made aware of when this happens, of people going through an airport are humiliated and so on. Because it's the small issues that mount up. It's the little people, as you say, who are told by the state and its agents, you can't do this or you have to do this. We've got to, I don't want to make this sensational, but we have to stand up now before it's too late.
No, I'm in complete agreement with you.
That's right. Michael, on your show today, you proclaimed what you were. You are a pro-lifer, you're pro-Israel, you said you're Catholic, and you made no apologies for that. You said, God bless Canada. How do you see, now this isn't, one of my thoughts when I heard you say that, and actually I was thinking this even before you got on the air and with your show, The Arena, is that a lot of the, a lot of the conservative talk show types on radio and in television are coming from a libertarian point of view, essentially. It doesn't sound like you are going to. How are you going to make your show distinctive and reflecting your religious beliefs and your faith? Are you intending to try to do that?
Oh yeah, I'm not an ideological libertarian. I believe in liberty, but I don't go around holding a copy of Hayek or Ayn Rand or anything like that in my hand. I have to say that I find
they're in your library, though, right?
I find hardcore libertarians, frankly, a bit irritating because it's like when I was at university in Britain with the far left, and every single issue could be and every problem could be solved by the application of some sort of Marxist ideology. Well, being a libertarian, believing in liberty is one thing, but just removing the state. Every time there's a problem, it's the state. No, I mean, that's not always true. However, I mean, I would say that I was a middle-of-the-road pragmatic libertarian, if you like. But I do believe in a supreme being. I'm a Christian. I'm an Orthodox Roman Catholic. Now, I'm not going to obsess about religion on the show. But, for example, we have Bill Donoghue from the Catholic League on, I think, on Thursday. Great feisty Irish-American Catholic who has really changed, I think, the debate down there because he highlights all the anti-Catholic discrimination in media in particular. One of the things I want to talk to him about, for example, is in Madrid we had 1.5 million young Roman Catholics for World Youth Day to greet the Pope. Now, if you look at how little attention this got in media, 1.5 million people, not the lies about 1 million people at Gay Pride Parade when it's more like about 180,000. I mean, this is actually one and a half million. The 100 protesters, though, got quite a lot of media attention, and that's entirely typical. So I'm going to make sure that we do redress the balance there a little bit. Issues of life and sexuality, I will discuss. We're going to show some of the Silent Scream. The video showing how an unborn child tries to save itself when an abortion takes place. You don't have to be pro-life, but what I'm insisting on is that you listen to the pro-life point of view, as well as the other side. So we're going to show that, I think that's on Friday. So yes, we will have faith-based issues will be on the show, but there's so much to talk about. There's so much politics. We're going to have a lot of international politics, too, Middle East and Europe. We'll have one or two interviews from London, England, every week on the show. So we've got some very important people. I want to introduce Canadian audiences to some very, very funny, talented, clever British conservative thinkers and writers who are going to come on and tell people how the world works and how it should work.
You're going to further corrupt Canada, are you?
I'm going to try to. I'm going to try and corrupt this country as much as I can before
well,
I get
hallelujah.
You might also look at that as saving Canada. And here's something I want to move into an area that you did not touch on in your excellent first show today. And that's been the biggest story in Canada, I think, in the last month, and that's the death of Jack Layton, the NDP leader. Not his death necessarily being the biggest story, but the reaction to his passing. I've heard it described as the Dianification of Jack Layton, in that all of a sudden he became this untouchable demigod who people were, I don't know, it's fawning over. There was even this story of a Canadian Press story of last Friday where an unfortunate guy in Toronto named Troy Oakley was so moved by Jack Layton's final, very carefully crafted letter to the Canadians that he had several lines of that letter tattooed on his arm.
Well, he's mentally ill then.
My friend, love is better than anger. My hope is better than fear. Optimism is better than despair. And by the way, if you look closely at a picture of that tattoo, you will see that the tattoo artist had made a typo and had
a tattoo-o
and had in one of the instances had written in instead of better than, better than.
Oh no!
And he had to change that A and he had changed that E into an A, and then he had to go and change all the other A's to make it look match that same. What is this?
Well,
it's hilarious.
It serves him right. I mean,
yes, exactly.
You know, I have some major issues with tattoos. I mean, I must admit, I do have a tattoo. It's an old sort of military thing on my arm, which I wish I could get rid of, but you can't. But the only really good tattoo, well, I've seen a few good ones, but the one I remember most of all was my grandfather, God rest his soul. And he got the tattoo in the middle of the desert, fighting Nazis who wanted to tell us what to do. And he got his wife's name, Bertha, tattooed. But by the time I knew him, though, it sort of said Bafuzia, because his body wasn't as taught as it had been in 1943.
Well, before we leave the issue of tattoos, I think the tide may be turning, because there's actually an Afro-American NBA player who does not have a tattoo. And somebody asked him within the last couple of months why he does not have a tattoo, and he said, "You don't put a bumper sticker on a Rolls Royce." And
well,
good for him.
Good.
It's not that I object to a small tattoo. I find the complete body painting and complete body piercing is profoundly pagan.
Yes,
it worries
right.
me a great deal. Yes. But this thing about Jack Layton.
Yes.
Actually, Mark referred to Jack tonight in passing. It's my monologue tomorrow is about Jack Layton. Look, I knew Jack, and although our politics are very different, I liked him. He was a decent man in that he was willing to listen to the other side. He certainly defended me a couple of times. He's a much nicer person than Stephen Lewis, Lord Pompous, who made that bloody awful speech patronizing this man of privilege who... And isn't it interesting how these families... All of their children seem to have their dad's jobs, or just walk into a job in media. My dad was a cab driver, you know. But anyway, Jack. I'm sorry that Jack died. He was far too young, and he certainly believed in this country. But the reaction was grotesque.
Hmm.
There shouldn't have been a state funeral, first of all. And if it was to be a state funeral, it should have been completely apolitical. There is nothing grand or clever about having a captive audience and then effectively abusing them.
Well,
Stephen Harper and the mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, they had the dignity and the decency to be there. And Lewis, again, this extraordinarily pompous man. People think he's an orator because he uses words that probably he doesn't understand, and certainly the crowd doesn't. But to stand up there and to rant about his policies and his politics. Look, Jack Layton did not... He would have been a terrible prime minister. And he didn't unite or unify this country. The politician who got the most votes and who most united Canada was Stephen Harper, not
mm-hmm.
Jack Layton. If the people really loved Jack that much, they would have voted for him. If you take the Quebec vote out of the NDP vote in the last election, it's a minority, a small minority party. Jack was a professional politician. I'm sorry he's gone, but he was a very ordinary man. And this mass grieving, this neurotic mass grieving for someone that people didn't know, is very problematic, because they'll walk past someone on the street. They won't even know the name of their next-door neighbor, but they'll weep over a puppy or a politician. And Princess Diana, you know, I'm sure she was a nice person, but she was absurdly pampered, and she was, I think, rather fatuous. That's when that was a great watershed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you imagine, I mentioned the Second World War, can you imagine the men who went off to fight in the mid-1940s weeping in public over someone who they'd never met, who had just died? Of course not.
But you know what, Michael, we actually, this thought came to me when we were talking about this whole situation before the show, and one of the things that popped into my mind, and I'm not sure if you guys are inclined this way back east, but out here in British Columbia, every time somebody loses their life on the side of the road, you know, whether it's a tragic car accident or some silly thing, this altar memorial gets set up where pictures and crosses and flowers. Plastic flowers, yeah, because we're practical here in BC. You know, erect themselves and you know, this is sort of a new phenomenon that people want to indulge in this.
Indulge in this grieving, and it's sort of a, you know, it's akin to masturbation in a way, I think. You know, where it's sort of like...
Now, you're going to explain that one, aren't you?
No, it's because, you know what, it's just kind of, it's not really grieving for the person. It's more like, I love this feeling of being in grief.
There.
So
yeah,
you're not doing it with...
Right.
It's sort of like indulging yourself in grief, keeping it alive, keeping it going for years after years after years. Oh, you can just imagine.
Well, it's not real grief. I mean, and those so-called shrines are quite horrible because they become very dirty very quickly, and
mm-hmm.
and they're all over the place. And you see, for example, the tragedy of when children are taken and killed, and there'll be a little shrine, and you'll see these bloody women dragging their kids along. You know, come on, you've got to come and see this, and posing for the camera. Children shouldn't be exposed to that anyway, and it's nothing to do with grieving. It's to do with making the person be part of a happening. A lot of this has to do with religion, because some of the people, if you look at the crowd, for example, at the Jack Layton funeral, I know quite a few of the people there. Some of them were incredibly aggressive atheists. They worked very hard to expunge God from our society.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they became the most fundamentally religious at his funeral. I don't mean real religion. I don't mean Christianity, for example. But you could see them trying to move their hands in certain ways, or some sort of hand-me-down Buddhism or New Age crap.
Right, holding their hands out over the...
Well, exactly.
When he was lying in state, holding their hands out over the coffin.
We are spiritual. I mean, we're creatures,
yes.
And we have a spiritual nature. And when we try and remove it, it's filled by something else. By the way, one of the most ridiculous moments of that funeral, apart from the drug user singing that song and so on, was the native leader uttering banality after banality. I think at one point he said something like, "I dream a little dream for you." And I'm not even exaggerating, but something along those lines. He held out a toy bird and he threw feathers around. I know people will be insulted by that, but I really don't care. If a priest had acted like that, we would have said, "Oh my golly." But when these childish banalities and cliches are uttered by a native, then we say, oh, wasn't that profound?
How profound. Well,
and
it's
the racism of lowered expectations, black, brown, native, that has to be clever. No, no, no. Call Islam what it is. Call native spirituality what it is. Let's have a level playing field. If you want Christopher Hitchens and Dawkins and Sam Harris, if you want to attack Christianity, have the guts, have the courage to say what is true about other religions or quasi-religions as well.
We're used to the elevation of the Aboriginal spiritualism here in British Columbia because it's sort of the unofficial state religion here. Just about every public, government public event, and a lot of non-government events that are of the sort of leftish or progressive ilk, will open with let's hear from the elder from the Squamish Nation and thank him for allowing us on his traditional territory, and he'll come and sing. I was at the convention, the national convention of the Canadian Foundation, the Conference of Canadian Community Foundations of Canada. Because I sit on the board of a community foundation, and it opened in the same way. You go to schools supposed to know religions in schools, except the big except is for any Aboriginal religion. They'll have
or Mother Earth, your other favorite.
That's true, favorite Mother Earth.
I thought you were going to break out in song when Michael mentioned the puppy dying.
Yes, right.
If I could ask that, this native spirituality, does it include eating the fingers of other people? Does it include slavery? Does it include acting when you wake up on some dream that you had, often leading to colossal violence? Please, I mean, native spirituality. Pantheism is not particularly native, and it's so insulting also to all those wonderful native Christians, all those people who by the way, many of them die for their faith.
By the way, native Christians do not exist. If you're in the downstream media here, you've never heard of them, never reported on them, don't want to know about them.
My God, the head of the Assembly of First Nations said a few years ago was a Pentecostal Christian. I was in just outside Edmonton a few years ago, this wonderful pilgrimage shrine for Native Catholics. It's deeply, deeply insulting.
Yes.
But again, I think that probably has a lifespan. I don't believe it'll exist long term. People will see through that.
Well, maybe with your good work and the work of your colleagues and a little bit of work here at the Roadkill Radio, the mighty fortress of truth and sanity here on the West Coast, we will see that come about, and we'll reach that shining city at the top of the hill.
What, reality? You're talking about reality, Terry O'Neill?
That's right.
In Canada?
Roadkill Radio. That's where we're on the road to. That's for sure. And so we welcome you to the pantheon of freedom seekers, truth talkers, and
civil common sense Canadians.
Civil common sense Canadians, Michael. I know you've been that for you've had a great career in journalism as a writer.
Well, that was until I started hearing you wanted to import talent from across the pond.
Oh
there,
yeah. Well, it may well be that Toronto's closer to England than it is to Vancouver. So.
From here it's about 7 hours to London, about 5, I suppose.
Yeah, so, yeah, but you've got to go over mountains to get here, so maybe we're more foreign to you.
Well, you know, if the West Coast can't do it, Michael, more power to you. Bring in the reinforcements.
That's right.
Call in whatever you need there.
We're gonna try, but I think of the time now, we air at 8. P.M. 7 p.m.
7, 4 o'clock here. I watch you live at 4 o'clock.
Okay, now we're repeated. I hope to change this long along the line. I really want to change this, but at the moment we're repeated at 2 a.m., so that's 11 o'clock your time.
That'll be 11 here, yeah.
So that's not too bad. So people can actually can watch it at 11, but I'd like to, I mean, I've just started, I'm the new boy, but I'd like at some point for us to be repeated at a better time than that.
Okay, good. Well, listen, good luck, and thank you very much on what I'm sure was a very busy day for you. Thank you for joining us here on Roadkill Radio. Congratulations, and keep up the great work, Michael.
Yep.
Thanks so much. You take it anytime. Thank you.
Thank
good
you.
Stuff.
Great.
Good night,
bye-bye.
Michael.
Okay, good night.
Good night, Michael Koren.
Good man.
Good man, and it was a solid show. Boy, he had a lot of top guests. By the way, two of them had, at least two of them had new books. Mark Stein has a new book, of course. Ann Coulter, she's got a new book.
Not Ann.
Yes, Ann Coulter has a new
Ann
book.
Ann Coulter has a new book.
And Yuan Williams has a new book. So three of the four of his main guests had new books today. All with something to flog.
Well, and Michael Koren himself has a few books out there.
He does, yeah. And they're not necessarily as newsy as some of these books are. He's written biographies of, Michael, if you're listening, I'm sorry, I think, did he write a biography of C.S. Lewis or G.K. Chesterton or maybe both? Maybe both, anyway. Good for Michael, and I'm glad we're seeing him do well on Sun TV, continuing to expand its reach. Here in British Columbia, I don't know where the rest of Canada, or at least in the lower mainland, part of the lower mainland I live on, it's Shaw, you have to, channel 177, so you have to really look for it to find it there, but it's well worth.
And Star Choice has it, but I understand TELUS doesn't carry Sun TV.
Oh, really?
Is that, yeah.
Oh, somebody was just telling me about what a great deal TELUS is with their new optic thing.
Oh.
I should maybe go for that, and now maybe I won't.
We're going to have a little bit of story about TELUS in a few weeks.
Okay. All the
TELUS is implicated in a scandal, people.
Okay.
You'll have to wait to find out, though.
Now, we're not going to go to Chris Delaney for a few minutes. Before we go to Chris Delaney, we wanted to talk a little more about what's been happening this summer and what's going to happen this fall.
Yes, you have an announcement.
Yes, after a lot of consideration, and I've decided to run again for Coquitlam City Council. The election is in mid-November, mid-late-ish November, November 19th, is it? Something like that, a Saturday. And there will be 8 openings on Coquitlam City Council. All, as far as I know, all 8 incumbents are running, so it's not going to be like there's 3 or 4 openings. And there's going to be a good lineup of newcomers attempting to get on as well. I decided
you're going to have to sweep a seat, are you?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to knock somebody off one of those. I'll be aiming for one of those QP-supported, union-loving, high-tax, embracing leftists on council. And that will be my target.
The ones that like to spend all the money.
The ones that like to spend the money, that's right. So I'll be aiming for those. There's no slate, so, you know, I might knock off somebody that I'd like to have as a colleague. That's kind of odd, but I won't be, you never really know how the vote's going to go. It's hard to target. There's, in Coquitlam, you can vote at one of about 25 places. You can vote at any, if you live right next to a voting station, you don't need to vote there. You can go across town and vote there. So keeping track of who votes where is difficult as well. It's kind of odd.
Wow.
Yeah, it's total
open. In Langley, we're organized.
Yeah, well, they've done this to try to make it easy for people, but it's very hard to kind of specifically look at a group of voters and get them out to the polling stations to keep track of them, because they might vote at polling station A, but you think they should be voting in polling station Z, so having people keep track.
It's a wild bunch where you live.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. That's right. But anyway, I'm very excited about it. I'm getting lots of people talking to me. Last time you were very close. That's right. There was a by-election a year and a half ago. My first time that I tried for Coquitlam Council, I finished second out of 8 candidates.
That was just for one seat.
One seat. I received 30% of the vote. Numbers 3 to 8 received 30% of the vote. So my vote equaled everybody else's. Unfortunately, if you do the math, the winner got 40% of the vote. And he was the sole Labor-backed candidate, and they went to bat for him. And
it
countless
was a war.
Folk. It was it was all behind the scenes. You know, everybody's friendly up front, and he never broadcast himself as a labor candidate or anything like that. But they worked their union list, not just an NDP list. Mm. They worked their CUPE, civic worker list, big time. And you know, there's several hundred.
So the people in Coquitlam, the regular old tax-paying people, need to come out and.
The ones who aren't necessarily government employees, or maybe government employees who see that there's inefficiencies there and think that that there can be better things done to make Coquitlam a friendlier place to live for people, less onerous taxes and more fair tax distribution between businesses and residents, things like that. I mean, the whole property tax system that we're stuck with is kind of maddening, you know. It's not the fairest way of taxing people.
Well, you know what, Terry, I'm going to make a prediction here because you know I'm pretty good at
you have
I'm
been,
predictably
you
predictive.
Have been great. Matter of fact, you've got a whole long record of successful predictions.
I do.
And the most recent was the HST prediction.
The federal election,
bang on.
That was great.
I did predict the Stanley Cup would go to Boston, though.
But you know what? That's why
Sorry.
It did. You realize
no, no.
Because you misdirected
things.
The roadkill prediction power.
The roadkill.
And when you uttered that, I still remember that moment when I said, "So what's going to happen, Terry?" I'm not kidding, people. This is what Terry O'Neill did. This might even qualify as being a traitor to a degree.
Okay,
I looked at you with hope.
Yeah.
Because you are the resident sports
guy. Okay, sure. Yeah.
You know your Canucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And I looked at you with hope. Because I knew you would utter the truth.
It was
you,
like a little
you
girl
had a
looking
handle
to her father
this.
for advice on
hardly.
What? No, okay.
Oh, wise one.
That's right. My daddy.
And I looked at you and I said, "So, Terry, what's going to happen?" And you didn't even bat an eye. You just kind of assumed that position and you said, "They're going to lose."
Yeah.
And I was devastated.
Yeah.
Because you see, if you had said using this roadkill stage
That's
and
true.
All that it represents, they are going to be triumphant.
Triumphant, and then I'd look like a fool because they were going to lose. Anyway, I'm sorry about that.
There is a time to be truthful and deal in reality. There are other times
true.
To indulge Carrie.
Well,
Carrie.
It was a lovely ride over the late spring. The entire spring. The entire spring was taken up with Stanley Cup playoffs. It was kind of excruciating. And we did talk about the ride after, yes.
Yes, we did.
And then we talked about column
Remember
I wrote for the
tree?
Post
she
and
saved
the tree. She
tree.
Saved the tree.
Remember
That's
the
right.
Tree? One of the rioters
was,
saved
that was
the
my,
tree.
One of my last.
Kill the store, save the tree.
That's right.
So going back to my prediction.
Yes, okay.
I'm feeling this for you. Okay. I am feeling this for you.
Yes.
And, you know, I've batted 100%.
Yes, okay.
We have the recordings. We have the evidence.
Indeed.
That, you know, not only did I call the federal election and the HST, I said the Liberals are going to get spanked, and they got spanked. But, you know, I suspect, Terry O'Neill, if I was a betting woman, and those who know me know I play poker.
That you are. That's right.
I would suggest that one of those 8 available seats is going to have your name on it.
Well. That's very nice to hear.
And we
that.
Will
Thank
miss you.
You. Yes, well, I'll miss this as well. And as part of this, and I'm here. I've been away most of the summer. I was on vacation.
Yeah, see what happens when we let you out. You get into
right.
trouble.
I was on the vacation the second half of July and into early August. And then as soon as I got back, we went into a highlight package. That's a good way of saying it. Highlight package for 3 weeks. I'm back for a week and I've always told myself that I have to really concentrate on this campaign. So come beginning of September.
You don't think our audience kind of knows you're the focus kind of sort.
Well, yeah. Come the beginning of September, this is going to have to be my prime focus, not this, but my election campaign. And so I've stopped writing I've just written my last column for the Tri-City News.
So you're shutting down?
I'm shutting it, yeah, for the, and I'm, I probably won't be writing anything for the National Post. I've already given off some work that I do in a couple of the nonprofits that I've been heavily involved with. Actually, I had a 2-hour meeting today with our new executive director and giving her some files. So marketing and communications for the next several
now,
months.
What if all of us auxiliary people in your life get together and vote you back in to
well,
our world?
Well, yeah, you'd have to go and see, try to
I can
a lot
do
of big anti-Terry O'Neill campaign and go quit them to get me back. That's true. So, you know, I've been involved in a lot of different things, and so for this fall, I have to put them all aside to concentrate. I owe that to the people who are already supporting me. And, you know, I don't want to give it a half-hearted effort. I certainly didn't do it.
I don't think you would know how to do that.
Oh, I would. I'm lazy. So, I've got to crack my, yeah, I'm involved in 8 or 9 things now, but, you know, given my druthers, I'll watch TV and,
Terry O'Neill.
I will, but I don't let myself do that. Like, sort of, it's kind of like somebody might be inclined to something, but, you know, I could very easily
do it. You're inclined, but you don't indulge.
But I don't indulge as much. I do sometimes, but anyway, I'm not going to this fall. I made a pact with myself.
All right, well, let me ask you this.
So this is going to be my one and only show for maybe, this might be my last show for quite a while. We'll have
to see. I don't know. I happen to know you well enough that there will be those moments during this campaign.
When I need therapy! That's right.
And there will only be one place that you can come.
That's right,
to get your relief.
You are right about that. Even if it's a guest editorial or something to come on here. Terry O'Neill is just storming in here. Look out. Give him a microphone.
And you know your seat will always be available because there is nobody who could sweep your seat.
That's very
on
nice.
Roadkill Radio.
Okay, there are shoes that can be filled, but seats that can't be swept.
There you go.
Swept. That's right.
Or seated
anyway,
upon.
Anyway, that's right.
So anyway, you're going to be a busy, busy man.
Yes, I will.
And we are going to keep everybody posted and updated.
Yeah,
and you are going to be doing lots of things online so people can
track
you.
That's right. I'm going to crank my blog up again. My website, I'm just in the process of going to update the website, terryoneill.ca. And that will connect to a Facebook page. It will connect to a blog. People are talking to me about the need to Twitter. I'm not a great tweeter right now. I don't tweet at all. But maybe I'll have to do that. I'll definitely do Facebook updates every day, several times a day maybe. And I'll be blogging as well. So, press releases, public appearances.
So it'll be good news for all your stalkers.
Yeah,
they're going to be able to find you.
Yeah, they'll know where to find me. They know where to find me now. I've lived in the same house for 30 years. Public phone number and address, it's all there. And only one threat. In 30 years I've lived there, and that was when I was editor of BC Report. And you can just guess what section of society might have come after me, because they've come after you big time many times as well. So I will leave it at that.
Yeah, well, I've had more than one time.
They aren't social workers either. That'd be the one. Yeah. That'd be the only other group that you might think of that would come after you. Would be Social Workers Union.
You know what surprised me? And I remember having this discussion. By the way, people, it was the International Socialists. I am the great threat to the International Socialists. And, of course, they're right in cahoots with the radical gay activists.
That's right.
And,
it was
and
the radical gay
you
activists.
Know, we're always so clear on this show to make sure that, you know, that we limit it to that portion because there's a lot of good people within the community. But you have this radical element that's hooked into unions and the International Socialists. And this, I remember going over to Victoria. And,
exactly. I was thinking of that when we were interviewing Michael a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I got heads up that there was going to be another riot because Kerry was speaking. And unlike Ann Coulter, we don't cancel our events.
That's right.
And going to the Victoria Police Station, walking in and saying, look, you know, talking to the staff sergeant, I think his name was Gummer, something there, and saying, look, you know, this is what's happening. I've just got heads up on this. And he said, but this is the parents' meeting. I said, I know. You know, like, okay, if we're making that much difference in one of their strongholds, people, that's the public education system. There should be a huge clue in that for parent listening tonight.
Hey, listen to Michael Korn's opening monologue, not a monologue speech, I guess it was a monologue today at the beginning of his show. He was drawing hard lines between radical Muslims, radical gays, radical secularists, radical environmentalists, saying this is all part of threats to freedom.
Yep.
Threats to freedom of speech, threats to freedom of association. The parents in Burnaby are learning this. Their eyes have been open in the last half year, and we'll be talking to one of those parents
an
hour or so.
We addressed this in our brand new opening. For those of you that weren't there at the beginning of the show, we have a new trademark animation superhero named R.K. Raccoon, who's out there standing, saving us from overzealous bureaucrats, conformity of thought thinkers and plotters,
All those things that work against freedom and liberty.
Stop in the name of the law of common sense.
Thank you, thank you.
That's right.